Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. My name is Jeff Harris, and this is our retrospective of 2014 in geek culture. So I brought friends.
Hi, friends.
So let's go ahead and have the friends introduce themselves. Friends and family.
I was going to say, I'm not your friend. Yeah. I'm
Jill's looking at me like, we're not friends.
We're not friends.
We're siblings.
We're siblings. That's different.
Completely
Hi,
different.
I'm Jillian Venters from Gothic Charm School. I am his long-suffering little sister.
Jennifer Lovely from Don't Read the Latin and JekyllLoves.com.
I'm Michael Montour, also of Don't Read the Latin.
So you can see what this is going to be like.
Heckling.
So the sass has already started.
I'm going to give everyone listening fair warning. We just got done recording the 2014 retrospective for Don't Read the Latin. Although this episode is going to come out first because it's going to probably be shorter and I edit faster. Which at least gives us the advantage we can maybe refer to what we recorded and you'll go, oh, I can listen to that later. But 2014, in geek culture, I have a feeling that this was both a great and terrible year for geek culture. Some wonderful things happened and some awful things happened. So what I want to talk about first is not even getting into the media right away, but just sort of how geek culture as a culture behaved this year. We had something horrible. Well, we had something horrible happen, but we also had something that on an opposite side, I think was wonderful. The horrible. All right. Very simple. And I talked about it last podcast. Gamergate.
Yeah.
I mean, Gamergate happened in geek culture and it's one of the most awful things ever. And it's one of those things that, you know what? I can talk about it and it can kind of get away with it because I'm a white guy.
And I got one, I was sharing a whole bunch of kind of pro-feminist, pro-nerdy information, and all my stuff gets cross-posted to Twitter, and I started getting targeted with educational links of, you know, you're so wrong, here's what you should be reading, here's how you're wrong, and it scared me, and I have a 5-year-old daughter that I was pretty openly sharing pictures of her on Tumblr and on stuff that wasn't locked down, and I deleted, my Twitter now stops at that point, because I literally just deleted every tweet that I had in there, because it was too hard to go back and sort through everything, and now, a lot of my, other than my deliberate, you know, I have, you know, have an Instagram, my Facebook is completely locked down. The stuff that can't be locked down, which is Tumblr, I'm, you know, I have posted one or two face-forward pictures of my daughter, and it's a very, I make a very special deliberate choice, but I've locked everything down because I'm like, they can fuck with me if they want, but I've got a little girl.
Yeah.
And I locked that shit down because I had yet hadn't gotten, like, threats. Mm-hmm.
But with something like this, it's
these
only...
These are people I didn't know.
Yeah.
Targeting me, telling me how, you know, I needed to be re-educated, and that frightened me.
I have one friend who is a staffer for a couple of the conventions in the area.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to get into specifics, so I don't want to ID her.
Yeah.
But she made some comments, and there have been repeated attempts to hack her bank account.
Oh, jeez.
To the point of her bank is canceling her account because they've deemed her too big a risk.
What the hell?
But the thing is, the stuff, it's so ugly.
Yeah.
It is so ugly. I was so embarrassed, and I have to be kind of nonspecific, but there was, I work for a domain registrar, I do fraud, and
she handles fraud.
Handle fraud, whatever. But, you know, there are people that hate us anyway, but we had a domain that was, I think, in an anti-China and was being kind of vocal about standing up for things, and we started getting attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to encourage the registrant to take their domain elsewhere. And I was so ashamed that they had to leave, but it was literally affecting our whole company. I don't even know how it should be, but... The thing is, the stuff is so ugly, the threats are real.
Oh, yes.
The stuff is dangerous, and it takes everything down, and it costs money, and I hate that they have the power that they do, but They do. That is the unfortunate thing, is these threats. And the people who want to say these threats aren't, they're like, oh, it's just boys will be boys.
No.
And, you know, oh, they're just words on the internet. I'm like, I'm sorry, they're not.
They're not.
They're fucking scary and they're dangerous.
What I am hoping that one of the things that comes out from everything that has gone down about Gamergate and all that is that it has become visible enough that most rational people will look at it and go, I don't want to be associated with that. Mm-hmm. I may not 100% agree with everything the other side is saying, but I don't want to be that.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's
a step too far.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
I don't know how likely it is.
Unfortunately, it's kind of hit the point now, and I think somebody summed it up I read this week, was at this point, they're not even caring about their cover story about game journalism anymore. They just want to be monsters. And that's what's giving them pleasure. And, you know, it's going to be, I think what's going to eventually...
They want to be right.
Yeah.
And they have a whole group of men that are saying they're right.
And I think what's going to eventually happen to them is somebody's going to cross a huge line that's going to get law enforcement involved heavily. And I think they...
I'm really scared that it's going to be a line that...
It's going to be a horrible line. And I think, I don't know what will shake out of that. But I unfortunately don't think they're going away anytime soon.
No.
However, on the flip side, what was great in near this arena was this was the year we saw many conventions, both small and large, take huge steps in their harassment policies, creating safe space for their attendees. You now have harassment policies that are very specific, very well crafted,
yes,
that are very well designed to take care of the attendees, make sure it's a safe space.
Understanding of all the different types of attendees that aren't just harassment, but understanding that a lot of the fans that you get are going to be less social, they're going to have social issues. That, I mean, I think there's a lot bigger understanding to creating quiet rooms for people.
Yeah.
Because I think little things like that will keep a lot of things from escalating. It creates a safer con experience for everyone.
Yes. Having a quiet room for people to go and kind of decompress is huge, because I have friends who don't go to conventions because they get overwhelmed. And if you're not staying on site to where you can go to your room for like half an hour and take a nap and look at the internet and go, okay, I am now strong enough to go deal with people.
Yeah.
The conventions are too overwhelming for them.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people.
I've seen two conventions that I've been to personally this year have quiet rooms.
Yeah, good.
And I was so appreciative of both of them. Even though I don't need it. I'm not one of those people that gets overwhelmed. But again, enough of my social circle does that I'm like...
Hello, we are your extroverts?
Yeah, you can go to the quiet room. It'll be fine. Well, we're talking. One of the conventions I went to this year that I had a great time at, even though I didn't get to spend a lot of time because other life things, Geek Girl Con in the area. And
I really want to go next year.
The thing that I loved is that seeing a convention that was so child friendly, in that not that it was just a safe place for children, but they had things geared to the child. To engage them. The science corner. I'm really looking forward to going next year with you and with your daughter because I think it's going to be a great environment for her. We had our friend this year take her daughter, who became a little bit of an internet sensation. sorry, just so you know right now, we're having a picture taken.
We're having a picture moment.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, our friend who took her 9-year-old daughter and cosplayed, the daughter cosplayed as the Winter Soldier, as Bucky Barnes.
That was so amazing.
And it was a great cosplay, and it's very disconcerting to me, in a way, to see pictures of my goddaughter crop up on my Tumblr from people I don't know, and there's like 16,000 notes that she was the best tiny Winter Soldier ever.
Yeah.
Her expression is amazing.
She practiced the brain-wiped assassin grumpy expression for like
so
6
good.
Months.
I took 3 pictures myself. I sent them all to you.
Yes. Like,
and she come up to me, take another picture of me for Auntie Jilly. But the point is her mother took her there to, at 9 years old, introduce her to her tribe.
To introduce her to geek culture. And that's such a big difference to when all of us were growing up where, you know, trying to find like-minded weirdos who didn't think you were crazy because you wanted to read comic books or horror movies or, you know, horror books or play role-playing games.
Yeah.
Now, because of the internet, and this is something I tell a lot of the baby goths, too, of it is easier for you to find your people. You may be the only one in your small town, but because of the internet, You can connect with your people and know there's a life outside of your small town and find out about things that you may not have known about.
Actually, her mother gave me one of the best phrases. Sorry. And that is, she did not want her daughter growing up being this feral geek.
Yes. Yeah.
So feral geek is now my phrase for those who are out in the wilderness and haven't found their people yet.
But it is so... feeling of safety when you realize you're not alone is so important.
It's so huge.
And it's life-saving, it unfortunately.
Is.
I hate to...
No, it is. One of the really awesome but disconcerting things about running Gothic Charm School is that I am getting email from either parents or kids as young, you know, about the kids who are as young as 9. Mm-hmm. I think the youngest reader of Gothic Charm School I've gotten a message from was somebody who was 8. And they're like, yeah, and I've loved all these things since I was really little, and I like scary cartoons, and I know I'm a goth even though I'm really young, and being able to have your site to show to my parents has made them feel a little bit better about that. And I think back to when I was a weird little spooky 6-year-old, and my parents were kind of like, well, okay, it's not harming anything, but we really don't get it. And the idea that there's this community out there to support those kids growing up, so maybe they won't make some of the horrible pitfalls all of us made in our exploration of geek culture. Like learning that people, just because people have the same interests as you does not necessarily mean they're people you want to be friends with. That's a big deal.
Just a fair warning for those hearing strange sounds in the background. Jen's husband and daughter came home, which is going to be advantageous because we're going to try and drag the husband into some of the conversation a bit here.
You should come over here, Brian.
Okay. So... And, Jen's husband, Brian, is in the house now, and the reason we want to bring Brian is soon we're going to talk about some of the geek media, and Brian has watched a lot of the stuff, and so can talk about it. So, anyway, but yeah, no, this is important to help build that community so that, like we were saying, the kids know that there's other like-minded people. Actually, Michael and I were talking on the way over that it amazes us, having been geeks in the 80s and being Doctor Who fans in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Where when we were coming up in our fandom, we would go to science fiction conventions and mention Doctor Who, and people would go, what?
Or maybe at best, that's that British thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were, the car ahead of us had a TARDIS sticker on it.
Yay! I love that you just see geek stuff everywhere now. It's wonderful.
Geek is the dominant paradigm of the cult. It's starting to become the dominant paradigm in pop culture, which is why the old guard of geek culture who are doing the gatekeeper nonsense makes me so mad.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to do that. So someone doesn't have the exact same, you know, in-depth background knowledge of a thing that you do. They're learning about it for the first time. Embrace that. Encourage them.
But that's been the one thing that's been really fascinating for me to watch as a sea change. Speaking of Doctor Who, is Doctor Who fandom used to be overwhelmingly male.
Right.
And slightly older. And now it's overwhelmingly female and slightly younger. And watching the old guard's minds explode as there's all this, you know, fanfic and cosplay and all this very, very female...
I have a theory. Activities. I have a theory about that. It's because...
Welcome, Brian Lovely, my husband.
Oh, hey, I'm Jen's husband, Brian. I have a theory about that, which is that, well, in the old days, Doctor Who was a weird old guy. These days, Doctor Who's a young hottie.
Well, we're back to weird old guy, but...
Yeah, that's yes. Not entirely it, because I'm on the fringes of a lot of fandom, I have seen the growth of that Doctor Who fandom, and there are people who, yes, initially get into it because, you know, oh my god, David Tennant, or oh my god, Matt Smith. And then they go back and watch everything.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
and
yeah.
They embrace the meta. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it's like with Sherlock. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone went, ooh, Benedict Cumberbatch! And then started exploring all the other adaptations.
Before The Long Knives came out. Watching Tumblr this past year, this seemed to be the year that Benedict Cumberbatch got thrown under the bus by fandom.
Everyone hit burnout, I think.
Yeah.
Which I kind of understand, but...
Yeah.
You're saying 2014 was the year of P. Cumberbatch?
Apparently.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But, well, actually, because about that geek culture, we have a doctor, we've had two now, actually, between Tennant and Capaldi, where the doctors themselves have been part of fandom.
Yeah.
We had Tennant, who was a fan. We had Capaldi, who was writing fan fiction as a younger man, an active fan. And I love the fact that he had a lot of input on his costume. And one of his deciding factors of his costuming was, how easy will it be for people to cosplay? Yeah. How can I create a costume where it won't be that expensive for the fans to make this costume?
Whereas, compare that to some of the attitude of previous studios, where, like, when the most recent, not most recent, when the next big wave Star Trek movie came out, not the J.J. Abrams one, but with the Borg Queen and the Romulans.
Right.
Oh. Yeah.
Where there was that amazing shimmer opalescent oil slick PVC.
That was awesome.
And Paramount bought the entire run from the fabric mill. Because that way no one could make a screen accurate costume.
Oh my god.
Yeah. This was a big deal because there were a couple of those who were like, no, I don't want to make a costume. I just want the damn fabric. I want a skirt. And you could not find it. And finally, after doing some research, it was a case of, yeah, they bought out the fabric mill's entire run and basically licensed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's also back before... that was back before, like you said earlier, geek culture is now the paradigm. That's back when there was a bit of an adversarial relationship.
There was a stigma to being a geek or being a really hardcore fan about something.
Is that still Richard Arnold days?
See, I was that lone fan. Literally until I moved out.
I'm not sure when his involvement ended, so it's hard to say.
I didn't realize there were other people out here until then. Yeah. And watching, everything was very singular for me.
Watching everything take over pop culture and take over culture to where you can see, I mean, things are getting referenced in mainstream media. Walk down the street, you can find anyone who's wearing some sort of, like, mashup pop culture geek t-shirt.
Yeah.
Where there's, and also, I mean, also it's a marketing drive where big studios and things have realized, oh, wait, these are people who feel passionately enough about something that they will go spend money.
Yeah, don't alienate these people and, you know, empower them.
We have disposable cash. One of the things that brings this to mind is when on Twitter, Haley Atwell was asked about the Agent Carter costuming. And she actually gave links to the company that makes the lipstick and the perfume and the powder
That's
that
amazing.
They are, and the nail polish that they are using for that character.
It cracks me up, the idea of having screen accurate perfume.
I know. That cracks me up too. But what one of the things I saw was somebody going, oh, of course, the girls are only interested in the makeup. And it's like, no, this means we have resources. We can track this down. We don't have to do it ourselves. And we can bring some of the power of that character represents into our everyday life. Do I want to go out and get a tube of red velvet lipstick because Agent Peggy Carter is wearing it? Possibly, yes.
Yeah. But you also are now in an era where, depending on the creators... and their engagement with the fan base. I mean, this year I've been doing everything in my power to drag people into Thrilling Adventure Hour fandom that I just discovered this year.
Right. Yeah.
And part of that is the fan base is passionate, but so are the creators in interacting with them. I had one of my best fan experiences this year going to Emerald City Comic Con, and I don't collect autographs. It's just not something I did. But I did this year because it gave me a chance to interact with the Thrilling Adventure Hour cast. And the thing that's always going to stick with me is I went up to get Mark Evan Jackson's autograph. Now, he's one of the highest profile of the group because he guest stars. He's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine as the chief's husband. He appears in movies in small parts. He does a lot of work. He's been on Community, I think, or Parks and Recreation, one of the two, as a lawyer. So he's got some profile.
It's made of character actors.
Yeah. And he's Sparks Nevada. He's one of the main characters on Thrilling Adventure Hour. And it was their autographs. People were coming to see him. I went up to get my autograph. As I came up, he stepped forward, took my hand, said, "Hi, my name's Mark." I mean, he had to know I knew who he was coming for his autograph, but it was really important to him to introduce himself. And it was just a personal interaction that I really appreciated.
It's very telling when you see people who respect the fan base.
Yeah.
Because there's some that don't.
Yes.
And to be really honest, there's some fan base that's kind of scary. You know, yeah. Don't Don't show them the slash fic that you wrote about them.
No, that is a general rule that needs to be applied all across fandom. If you are making alternative media, be it vids or fanfic or fan art or whatever, you do not show it to the subjects of that. You do not. The only separate to that is Orlando Jones.
Yeah. And he seeks it out.
He is a gift to fandom, and do not forget, he is not the norm.
No.
So don't go up and ask, like, Misha Collins his opinion on Destiel Slash. That's not okay. Don't do that.
I actually saw that go badly once at a convention.
I've seen it go badly many times.
Specifically with him. But
yeah.
But yeah, but with social media and with that ability to connect, let's face it. One of the things we've been talking, going back to Agent Carter for a second, one of the reasons we're anticipating this series is Haley went online and detailed every time she'd accidentally hurt a stuntman.
Yes.
Or an actor that she thought was a stuntman.
Yeah. There was that personal moment of, okay, we've connected with her, that and the pictures of her sleeping everywhere.
Yeah, but like a tiny little kitten.
But the flip side to that, and this is something that I fear younger members of fandom don't necessarily get, is what you are getting on social media with those actors, those writers, people associated with the media you are a fan of, you're seeing a snippet. Most of them are trying to be aware of how they are presenting themselves to the public. Just because you read their Twitter or you follow them on Facebook does not mean you are friends with them.
Yes, that's very true.
There is still that divide of this is someone you admire, but keep in mind they are a human being.
Yeah.
And this is the slice of their life they're choosing to share with you, and let them have that portion of their life they're choosing not to.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen that go badly with minor internet celebrities, where people who make videos online and if they're interacting with the fans, and since it's not them playing a character, it's a variation of themselves. Yeah. You can get that. You probably get this, Jill, with your fandom. You have how many Tumblr followers do you have now?
A lot.
Many.
Yeah.
But it's really hard.
Yeah.
I have a couple of big podcasts that I follow, and it's really hard because you hear all of these personal aspects about their life.
And it's hard to keep in mind that you are not part of their life.
It doesn't go back and forth.
Yeah.
They are not as familiar with what's going on with you. And even if they friend you or have, chat with you and such, I think it's really, you have to be careful not to be the creepy one.
To presume on familiarity that might not be there. Yeah. Like, so, Facebook. Facebook is a great example. I have a terrifying amount of friends on Facebook, and I do go through and accept almost all the friends requests sent to me. I don't read Facebook.
Yeah.
Facebook is a place I go for very specific information. So if someone I don't know, but who I am friends with on Facebook contacts me about saying, oh, well, didn't you see this? It's like, no, I didn't. There are only many hours in the day.
But the beauty of that one is Facebook's algorithm of what it shows you is so terrible. You can use that as an excuse all day long.
Oh, no.
It didn't show me that post.
I am completely straight up. If someone's like, well, why didn't you see this on Facebook? Why didn't you comment? I don't read Facebook.
Yeah.
I have it for very specific reasons. I don't read it. Do not expect that is how I will see things or how you will be able to communicate with me.
If I want you to see something, and this is just us, I know.
Right.
Not to send something on Facebook. I'll either put something on Tumblr, or if I really want you to see it, I'll text you, hey, Jill.
Yeah.
I want you to look at this thing.
And it's getting to the point, and I don't have the kind of, friends on any of these things, but I have to deliberately go to, like, the people that are in this room, I have to deliberately go to your assorted pages, because it's lost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is lost, and, I mean, you have to text, call, or email, because if something's important for me to see.
Yeah.
And again, with larger aspect of fandom, I think a lot of people get that very myopic tunnel vision of, these are the things in fandom I am super passionate about, why aren't you passionate about them too? And it's like, maybe I haven't heard of it. Maybe because I have got so many other things I'm trying to keep track of that particular thing went by the wayside.
This actually reminds me of something we were kidding each other when we were recording the Don't Read the Latin episode. But that I've talked about because I think it's really important. Even, with Jill and I, we don't have every single aspect of fandom in common. You know, she was teasing me earlier about how can you be my brother and you've not read these horror novels? And went, how can you be my sister and not read these comic books? It's, you know, but you accept these differences. I actually wrote an article on my site about gatekeepers. And I pointed out that Jill and I are both fans of the movie The Avengers. I came from it as a longtime comic book fan. She came from it as somebody part of fic fandom. We both love the movie, but our appreciations came from two different gates.
Yes.
And both are valid.
I'm a big fan of the Marvel movies, to the point where I have on my key card at work, in my badge holder, I have a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent ID badge. Mm-hmm. And so I have a friend at work who is utterly puzzled by the fact, you don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? And I'm like, well, no, actually, I don't.
Yeah.
And he cannot grasp how
that
I could possibly...
you can pick and choose parts of the fandom.
Yeah. Yeah.
At my last job, I had a Stark Industries sticker on my laptop, which baffled everyone, because, you know, they look at, you know, little gothy me, and they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, and as soon as I get the clearance, I'm quitting this place, and I'm going for Stark Industries, whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, those, but yeah, with this year in fandom, and the thing is, this year, if you look at it, yes, geek really became the paradigm more than ever.
Yes.
And you look at all the big movies of the year.
TV shows.
Yeah. I mean, look at the movies. I mean, here's the thing, and Six and I were... Guardians. Again, we did this in the Don't Read the Latin, I have to do it now. Michael's nickname is Six.
Yes.
If you're calling somebody Six, it's Michael. But we were, because I gave him a ride here today.
There's a story behind that, but it's not interesting.
Yeah.
So moving on.
We were discussing the Marvel paradigm of how they make their movies and the fact that Marvel this year, the number one movie this year, box office wise, maybe not always critically, but certainly that hit the consciousness of everyone was Guardians of the Galaxy. And this is a third-tier Marvel comic that there are comic book fans that had never heard of this comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet Marvel, because they were smart as filmmakers, made us love... The main writer of the movie was a woman with some rewrites by the director.
Yeah.
And it was... We loved a talking raccoon and a talking tree.
Tecla has renamed. She has not seen the movie because my daughter is 5 and yeah. She's emotionally wrought, and sad things make her very, very sad, and I get to deal with the sobbing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't want to. I think there are parts of Guardians of the Galaxy she would love, and I will let her see it in a couple years. But she's named her new raccoon Rocket.
Maybe I can make an edited version of it.
Maybe
I'll
try, yeah.
But one of the things...
Mom's died.
Yeah. The one of the things that really points out how mainstream geek culture has become is go into any big box retailer.
Oh, yeah.
Target had adult size footy pajamas of Batman and Captain America. And the thing that really threw me is because I come from the goth side of things and we always mock Hot Topic, even though it's a great place to buy tights. I went into Hot Topic for the first time in years recently, and they still have the wacky gothic makeup and band t-shirts and what have you, but the entire front, like two-thirds of the store, is geekdom. They have a separate wall for Supernatural, they have a wall for Doctor Who, they have a wall for Sherlock, they have a wall for Marvel, they have a wall for My Little Pony. And I was like,
am I
crazy? When did this happen?
Possibly.
Big Hero 6, was that also not a Marvel?
Yes.
Marvel.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, it's a Marvel comic. But it was not released under Marvel Studios. Disney Studios actually made the movie. And in an interesting twist, all the comic book tie-ins were done by studios, by companies other than Marvel that Disney had connections with.
But it was a Marvel.
It was a Marvel property.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which
was also wonderful.
I need to see it.
It was really good.
The trailer was cute, and hey, there's a Fallout Boy song in it.
And I had to hold that look. There was crying.
There's a robot in it. I'm going to see it.
As crass as it sounds, the way you can tell how geek culture is doing is follow the money.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what?
Welcome to America.
I know.
This brings me back to my yearly quest for Jill's birthday present.
Aww.
Which never involves a prearranged plan unless her husband has told me something.
Well, right.
It always involves me wandering a mall trying to find something. And I'll be honest, I resisted going into Hot Topic. I was like, I am not going to set foot in a Hot Topic. But I wasn't finding anything that was speaking to me until I walked into Hot Topic. But what it was the wall of Funko figures. And I went, oh, maybe I'll find something here. And sure enough, they had a pair of Jack Skellingtons, regular and Santa, that ended up working
and
really well.
They're super adorable. However, I still say if another gift-giving holiday comes up and you were waffling about the Ouija board themed My Chemical Romance t-shirt, I totally want that.
Okay.
Because maybe I can summon the band back into existence.
Yes, and the fact that this year Funko Figures Hannibal got Funko figures. Oh, Jill, Jen is currently holding her Wendigo from Hannibal Funko. So, yeah, you're right. Follow the money. And the big money is in geek culture, no matter what way you look at it. So we talked a little bit about Guardians of the Galaxy. So let's talk for a minute about what was really good geek media this year. And I think we're all in agreement that Guardians of the Galaxy was a good movie.
Fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. In some ways, I feel like it was the most fun I had at a science fiction movie in a theater since Star Wars. And I'm not even exaggerating when I say that.
And by Star Wars, we mean the movie that came out in 1977.
Yes. Yeah.
Brian has opinions.
Yeah. Well, it's Star Wars. It was a space opera. Let's make a space opera.
Was, yes.
And one of the things I love about Marvel is each one of their movies is actually a different genre. They're all labeled as superhero or comic book movies, but they're each... I mean, Winter Soldier was a 70s spy thriller.
Yeah.
Starring Captain America.
Oh, my God.
And... one of the things that's funny...
It's just so good!
It is good.
What I love about Winter Soldier is... What do they call them? The real trailers?
Honest trailers.
Honest trailers. Like, a lot of times they're like, this is kind of crap. Winter Soldier is like, this was really awesome.
Yeah.
It's funny you bring up honest trailers, because, again, when Michael and I were driving here today, one of the things I pointed out to him was... There had been an honest trailer for The Avengers, and when it was doing its character recap, it showed a picture of Captain America and went, no one's favorite.
What?
And, yeah, no, but when The Avengers, like, no one's favorite. And that's because back when The Avengers made, everything was Hulk, Black Widow, and Iron Man, and Loki. But then Winter Soldier came out, and Winter Soldier was this, again, had Guardians of the Galaxy not happened, Winter Soldier probably would have been the big dog. And so Disney's had a very good year. Let's put it that way. And with Winter Soldier...
I know. I want unedited Star Wars.
You're getting them.
They've rumored...
I already have them because I have the Japanese Laserdisc.
Yeah.
Unedited because I have a fucking... I'm going to own two Laserdisc players. Soon.
You know, I've made a decision.
I have a problem.
I'm not going to edit this episode for language. I'm just going to put a disclaimer.
Jen, you don't have a problem. What you just described, there are solutions.
Yeah. Anyway, they're talking that we are going to finally, with the release of episode 7, we're going to get the original versions finally released. Because Disney can finally say, we're just going to do it. Why we like money?
Yeah.
Right. I was wondering if it's because Disney now has the rights.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only reason.
Disney can do what they want now. Disney can make the decision.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
Disney could put out a DVD of the holiday special if they really wanted to.
They really wanted to. If they were crazy.
And George Lucas would probably actually spontaneously combust.
But, yeah, with Winter Soldier, again, we got a really good movie.
Yellow Flame, too.
We got a good movie that here's the thing, and this was something again that we were discussing on the way over, and that is taking this character where everyone Captain America, he's the Boy Scout, and there was this brilliant scene in Winter Soldier, it's the elevator scene, where they were showing not just the scene had two purposes, to show us how smart Cap is. He's in the elevator. We know what's going to happen. But more importantly, Cap knows what's going to happen because he's paying attention to little details. And that great line, before we start, does anyone want to get out?
Yeah.
That's my best. That's the best
line. And the rest of the scene is establishing you do not mess with Captain America. He is a weapon. He's dangerous for a reason. Because that, it's the opposite of the Worf syndrome. Where... to show how tough aliens were on Star Trek, they'd have them beat up Worf, where it ended up making Worf kind of look like a wimp.
Right.
So what they show is, they show there's a reason you fear and respect Captain America, so that when he's having trouble fighting the Winter Soldier, you're not thinking Cap is weak, you're going, oh dear, this guy's really dangerous.
One of the things that I found fascinating about watching MCU stuff this year is how strongly Captain America, Winter Soldier resonated within specific parts of fandom. Yes, Guardians of the Galaxy was the top seller, but in terms of, like, the fandom side, especially in, like, the Fic universe, stuff like that, Winter Soldier was the property this year. Yeah. A friend of mine who's very into fandom, she's, like, my go-to person for Fic Links, she saw Winter Soldier in the theater something like 25 times, because she just wanted to capture every nuance of it. And occasionally I would go with her, not because I was such a big fan of Winter Soldier, even though I liked it, but it was like, well, sure, this is a social thing, I'll go watch you geek out and point at the screen, flailing incoherently.
Making peening noises.
Yes.
The thing that's fascinating me most, and I don't know, Jill, you and I have talked about this, is that so much of fanfic writers and just people on Tumblr in general seem to have kind of mentally skipped ahead to the point, well, we know Bucky is going to become part of the Avengers eventually, so we're writing that
we're
now.
We're writing that now.
Yeah.
And Bucky and his therapy llama.
Yeah, to the point where I read some of this, like, did I see the same movie you people did? Am I from the same timeline, or did I drift again?
Well, it's also like the people who will get really invested in specific characters to where they're watching a very different show or movie than some of the rest of us.
Oh, I have movies that have this whole underlying story.
Oh, well, so do I.
Yes.
But,
yeah. So,
but C6, I get the feeling of, wait, did we see the same movie? Are you in an alternate timeline? That's my reaction to fanfic pretty much in general.
It is an acceptable media source. I will defend the Toasterverse MCU fic until the end of time.
That's... I haven't read much of it, but I read the first couple of stories, and it's really good.
Roombas! To the point of where if we get a Roomba in our house, I'm like, I name it Captain Fantastic, or Mr. Fantastic? And Pete's like, you don't even read those comics. I'm like, what the fic?
And I have some Doctor Who fanfic that I would recommend to you, because I wrote it.
I will say this, and we touched on briefly, I do recommend Big Hero 6. For it's people who haven't seen it.
I'm going to see it.
It's a very good really movie. Good.
And it's emotional.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's really fantastic. And I saw it with my 5-year-old. She loved it. And I loved it on probably very different levels.
Yeah.
But it was fantastic.
The main thing I want to catch while still in theaters, and I'm wondering if anyone here has seen it, is Interstellar.
Yes, I have.
Good things about it.
The Fabulous Gay Stunt Husband loved it. Yeah. Like, will burble at you for a very extended period of time about it.
Interstellar, I've always been a fan of Nolan.
Yeah.
And often all you have
even
to tell...
Even when he's bad, he's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think. And Prestige was a fascinating movie, even though I'll pick it apart.
Yeah.
All its flaws. Inception, the trailer that didn't explain anything, still had me. It's Nolan and it's interesting visuals. Sure, why not?
Yeah.
Interstellar, the trick with Interstellar, and the joke going around Interstellar is, would somebody please explain to me what happened? And the reason that disappoints me is, I had no trouble understanding what was going on. I followed the movie completely. I don't need it explained to me. I also sometimes get curious and read scientific journals.
But yeah, I was going to say, isn't there, like, time dilation, relativity issues?
Here's the thing. I don't remember his name right now, but they had an astrophysicist work on this movie. A peer of Carl Sagan's and Stephen Hawking's.
Yeah.
A person who realized that he could use the CGI effect computers. They actually ran simulations. He's written two scientific papers based on the work they did making Interstellar.
Wow.
Nice.
It's cutting-edge science. It's science that not all the community agree on, which has been part of it, that some people disagree with the theories. But the fact that it's based on real posited theories and that they use the production of the movie to actually run simulations to try and explain some of it, the visualization of the black hole has always been mathematical. No one's ever tried to create a visual representation until now. And he wrote a paper on it. So it's,
but there was that Disney movie.
Yeah. Stop it.
So it's that cutting. So the reason some people, I think, get lost in it is like, oh, they made stuff up. It's not that they made stuff up. They posited theories that aren't universally accepted yet.
Right.
And that's so smart that they took something that will have a lot of dedicated computing power, because you look at any of the computation load that you need for doing CGI or anything like that, you know, you have dedicated banks of machines.
Render farms.
And then using that also to do the science. That's amazing. I want more of that to happen.
Yeah. So whatever people feel about the movie, it's important on just that level.
Sure.
And it's a decent watch.
Yeah.
Yes, it's deep, and it posits things that are uncomfortable, because it talks about what are the long-term ramifications of global warming and other environmental effects. And it posits a future that's not cheery.
Someone needs to be talking about
that.
I'm just saying.
And, you know, it's... So, I think it is not everyone's cup of tea, but I am glad I went and saw it.
Okay, I definitely need to do this.
I'm not sure if it's spoilery. This is too spoilery, you can cut it out later. I'm fascinated by the idea of love being faster than light communication.
Yeah.
And see, my theory is that you could exploit this. You put a sociopath on one end and an empath on the other end. The sociopath can go, I love her not. There, I just communicated the number two.
It, you know, I mean, that's one way to look. It,
you are wrong in that.
You know what? It's an interesting...
That one's mine, ladies.
You need to read Blindsight.
It talks... Ooh. You know what? I'm not going to try and get into all the scientific theory, because A, I'm not a scientist. I will say, check out the movie, and then maybe read some of the articles that went alongside it. It's fascinating stuff.
Cool.
What else did it... I'm trying to think what else came out this year that really had that kind of effect on me. The thing is, this was another one of those years of I was very select with the movies I went and saw. I didn't go see everything right away.
Brian and Michael both went and saw Lucy.
Oh, yeah.
Which I have not seen yet.
I want to see. I like Luc Besson. I like Scarlett Johansson. Mm-hmm. You know.
It was very fun.
Keep giving her action roles if they won't do a fucking Black Widow movie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
I'll put a disclaimer on this episode, because we learned what happened last time I tried to edit out all the swearing.
That didn't work.
It didn't work so well.
Yeah,
it was a lot of beep. It was a lot of... And then Jen made fun of me the one time I forgot I missed that one through, so I'm just...
But yeah,
whatever.
I didn't see a lot of things in the theater this year. And some of the stuff, like one of the ones that you would assume would be a big one to go see in the theater, I just don't care about at this point, which is Battle of Five Armies, Hobbit.
Oh.
And, I mean, part of it is I grew up reading The Hobbit. I am not a huge Tolkien fangirl. The joke is I outsource my Tolkien fandom
unlike
to
some
the,
people, you know.
The gay stunt husband. But I don't feel the need to go watch a two-hour battle scene.
Here's my confession. I have not seen any of The Hobbit movies in theater. I've seen them all at home on disc because my wife gets them.
Watched an hour of the first Hobbit movie and paused it and went, oh my... No, we watched an hour and a half.
I think we got and just past the trolls.
It. We paused it and we're like, there's another hour and a half left.
Oh God. Do we care about any of these people?
And I'm like, I don't care. I just have to go to bed now. I'm very tired. I'm very, very tired. And then we got up the next morning and I was worried because Brian was a hard... I mean, he was the Tolkien kid. Read them and I grudgingly read them once and didn't love them that much. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, though, I liked the series.
What you can't see is the accusatory series. Point Brian just did at Michael.
I'm doing the invasion of body snatcher.
You don't want me to make that noise.
We do that at this house. We're the family who does the point and scream at each other. But I did like The Hobbit. Number one, I didn't like The Hobbit. They should have done a nice... tight movie.
They should have stuck to the book, which was a children's fairy tale.
They did a nice tight movie of The Hobbit. It was done by Rankin Bass in about 1978.
That's fantastic.
Do you want me to start singing The Greatest Adventure?
I have to agree with Brian there. I love that.
They made the elves look really weird.
But that is the thing. That's the complaint. Is like watching these movies makes me long for the cartoon, and that's not the way it should work.
Yeah, I think that while I respect Peter Jackson's vision, I think the stretching of The Hobbit into these almost three-hour-long movies was completely unnecessary.
Well, I really, really want to go to the parallel timeline where Guillermo del Toro ended up making The Hobbit.
Yeah.
I might have liked it.
Yeah.
Well, here's
I'm sure I would have liked
the
it.
The trend that's kind of driving me nuts right now in film in general, and I don't blame where it started, because I think where it started was a good plan, but I think too many people have adopted it since, is when Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows was split into two movies, because it was such a long book, that was actually a smart way to do it.
And they still left out plot points that should have been in there.
And then everyone and their dog seemed, I mean, I don't know about...
The last Twilight book
did not need to be two.
It didn't movies. Need to be split. I don't think that Mockingjay needed to be split into two.
I haven't seen the first part.
Yeah, I still haven't either.
I was going to do it after I spent like 3.5 hours at the spa with Jill.
And then you were a big puddle of relaxation and you didn't want
to
move.
I was in the theater. I have to go home and lay down.
Yeah.
I did see Mockingjay, and I think I technically saw it before the end of the year. I saw it in December, so yeah. it counts. Now, I haven't read the book, so I don't know how much they've... I don't know if they're padding or stretching or if the book's just really dense and long.
Kind of. It is the weakest.
Yeah.
It is the weakest. Yeah. And the thing is, I really hope that they improve, because the ending of the third book feels like... I don't know. Was she having fun for a really long time and then stopped? Because there's like... People die. It's the Hunger Games. People die. And I'm not going to tell you who dies, because I know there's a lot of people who haven't seen it. But there are two deaths that I had to go back and reread and go, what?
Yes.
What? They're what? Because it's like in passing. It's like you walk by Tonks, and Tonks is in Harry Potter. You're like, what? Tonks is dead?
Some of us are still
spoilers. But with Hunger Games, you're like, what?
I mean, Remus and Tonks were taking a nap.
They're pining for the fjords.
Yes.
But in the books, I'm like, they have to improve on that ending.
I don't know for sure, but I suspect that the first Hunger Games book did so well that it was like, okay, you need to write more. And she may not have necessarily had an ending in mind. Yeah. Because that's one of the things, you know, with the expanding of movies into multiple hour things, you're seeing a lot of authors, especially first-time authors, come out with this one great idea, and the publishing industry is like, okay, now we're going to make a series, or we're going to make a trilogy.
Yeah.
And sometimes the idea the author has doesn't need to go that many books.
Yeah. Because speaking of books, so I read...
And what?
I do. And
you told me you could read.
Down upon that. No? Yeah.
And while I've been reading a lot of older books of older series, two books that came out this year that I read, it's really weird. They're both books in long-going series. And one just left me with the warmest feeling inside and a sense of, all right, give me the next one now. And the other one was like, the hell just happened? The book just stopped. I mean, yeah. The story didn't end. It just stopped. And this was, I talked earlier, was the latest Wild Card.
Oh, yeah.
The way they were telling that story, it just sort of stopped. And it's clearly they're setting up for the next book, but I'm like, give a satisfying ending to this book, even if it's a cliffhanger, but don't just stop in the middle of a scene.
Oh.
Versus the latest Dresden File skin game, where... Jim Butcher continues his trait of being one of my favorite authors for knowing how to deal with his characters, pace a story, and leave you satisfied even though there's more story to tell. It's one of those cases of, I read the synopsis for Skin Game and I was like, well, it'll be Butcher, it'll be fun, but I don't know that it'll be the best book in the series. And I forgot for a second what author I was talking about.
Yeah.
Because what he ended up doing was, I'm not going to, if you're not into Dresden Files, start. And just start now. And if you're an audiobook fan, just go there, because the books are all written by James Marsters.
Narrated by James Marsters.
Sorry.
See, this is why it's nice to have our friends.
Yeah, to correct me when I say stupid things.
You don't say Robert Wagner.
Yeah, you're never going to let that go, are you?
Nope.
So, but yeah, that was...
The shame I'll live with till the end of my life.
So anyway, yeah.
So, are we talking about books and unexpected comebacks?
Sure.
Oh my god, Anne Rice! Prince Lestat! Oh my god, oh my god. I am an Anne Rice fangirl. I freely own this. Okay, I own my cliches.
This is my surprised face.
And so when the news broke that Anne Rice was returning to the Vampire Chronicles and the title of the book was Prince Lestat, I had that twin feeling of, oh my god, new Anne Rice book, and oh my god, the last couple of Vampire Chronicle books were things I try not to talk about because they make me sad and cranky. And so I went into reading this book with a really low bar. My bar was, please, dear God, be better than Blood Canticle. That's all I ask. And not only was it better than Blood Canticle, I feel that Prince Lestat stands at the same level of quality Anne Rice cracktasticness as the original three of the Vampire Chronicles.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
I mean, there are points in the book, I mean, especially even early on, where you're like, really? This is where we're going with that. Alrighty then. Sure, Vampire Viagra. Why not? Let's go there. And that play, yes, but it plays out. And it is nutty, and it is quality lurid purple prose Anne Rice crack where she doesn't go off into the every character introduced gets a 400-page monologue about their history.
Right.
Things are a little more condensed. And Lestat has returned to being the snarky, self-centered jerk that we all love. So I was incredibly giddy about this.
Yeah. You know, it's, I think, maybe good we're a podcast, but a little disappointing we won't have video, because people just miss the hand flailing that Jen just did, the verklempt she had during Jill's discussion.
The Vampire Viagra. What?
I have that in my brain forever now.
To allow Lestat to feel biological erotic pleasure. And it's actually a plot point. It plays out.
So it's not just a...
not just a fan service thing, no. Right. It totally plays
Jen
out.
Jen is angrily putting her hair in a ponytail.
Ponytail of righteousness.
So the other thing I think, and I think we kind of what we've been waiting for, is as we were when we were talking during the recording of Don't Read the Latin, TV has been a very interesting place. The TV has overtaken films now as the creator's medium in so many ways. You see these people who you think of as film stars and film producers suddenly going to TV because they're allowed the freedom to make more of what they want. And a lot of people have been learning how to take advantage of the form. Now, it's not perfect, but there's been some interesting stuff happening in television recently. So, especially when it's the geek-based TV, that there were, what, seven comic book-related TV series on air right now.
And true to actual geek culture TV, as opposed to, say, Big Bang Theory, which is a geek minstrel show.
Yeah. It really is. And the less said about that, the better.
Yes.
But this year, okay. So, one thing I had wanted to talk about before was Constantine. And so here it is. So, Constantine is... Oh, all right, DC had three shows debut this year, along with one they already had existing. And Constantine is on NBC... But it kind of has the advantage of NBC is the network that's given us Hannibal. So giving the Vertigo comic over to them doesn't seem that weird because they've shown they are willing to show a lot.
You know, I'm really excited. It's another one of those living on my TiVo. Mm-hmm. I know it probably as soon as I start watching it, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's just finding the time to watch it.
It's just finding the time to watch it.
It took us a year to watch Penny Dreadful.
Yes.
I just started watching Supernatural this past year. I'm 10 years late to the party on that one.
Made it come out of my nose!
I mean, Supernatural come out of your nose?
Do you want me to give you a brief rundown later about what fandom parts to avoid?
I'm good.
All right, but what I want to say with Constantine is, unlike the movie, this is a show that knows its comic roots and kind of loves them. There are a lot of Easter eggs, but there are some of the episodes have been adaptations of actual issues.
Just in the first episode alone, just when she's picking up the helmet of Naboo, I'm like, yeah, you want to put that down. You want to put that down right now.
But, like, their third or fourth episode was an adaptation of the first issue of Hellblazer.
Oh.
And their plot line that they've been teasing at just recently realized it's echoing the American Gothic storyline from Swamp Thing that introduced Constantine.
Oh, nice.
And that they're pulling elements from the comics. And they are they have shown one episode. They've only done it once. But a lot of people are like, well, this is on TV, so they won't show him smoking. Nope. They showed him with a cigarette in his mouth.
Yay.
He was just lighting it, but they didn't show him puff, but they showed him with a cigarette. So yeah, the first thing is Matt Ryan is doing a great job at being John Constantine, even though they're pronouncing the name the American version. I'm going to give him that. In the comics, it's supposed to be Time, not yeah. Team. But he's doing a great job. The show is working at having those horrific elements in it. The episode that was the adaptation of the first issue of Hellblazer had some pretty scary stuff show up, including a very well-done demonic possession. And the way they ended it was kind of simultaneously heartwarming and horrible. So, which is very Vertigo.
It's the heartwarming part that I'm just not so sure about.
Well,
because John Constantine has always been the throw your friends under the bus for the greater good.
Well, yeah. And that aspect is still there, but they had to soften that a little in that they at least show him feeling bad about it.
Okay, all right.
You know, that was the important.
I guess I'm okay with that.
That's there was that in it. But a lot of people have been freaking out about NBC has said, yeah, we're only going to do 13 episodes. And a lot of people are like, oh, they're only going to do half a season. The show's in trouble. Okay, they only do 13 episodes of Hannibal.
Yep.
13 episodes for NBC does not mean your show is dead.
Yeah.
It just means NBC is willing to embrace the shorter, tighter season.
Exactly.
It's certainly a lot better than what we're getting with Gotham.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You're the only one to talk about that.
Yeah.
But here's the thing I want to talk about. I, in general, hate prequel shows. I think prequel shows are inherently limited, and I don't know why they go for them. The only exception I have for that is Hannibal.
Yeah, guys, like
because I don't see. I've come to the point of view. I don't think of Hannibal as a prequel show. I think of it as Bryan Singer's reimagining of the entire Hannibal saga, and I don't mind. He's just starting way at the beginning because it's not just going to be a prequel show. He said if he gets to do further seasons, he's going to start adapting the books.
Yeah, which is good.
So that's much more of this is a man with a plan versus something like Gotham, where Gotham, and I've written my review of it, and I've talked about it on the podcast before, it's this combination of wonderful and terrible.
I have no interest in watching it.
Yeah.
Nope, then whatever.
So I want to bring up, it's like, of all the adaptations out right now, Gotham is certainly the least.
Well, and I think, now I haven't actually watched Gotham, but from your descriptions of it, descriptions I've read and heard other people saying, what I was going to say in the general case, and this applies to Constantine too, for me, I am more comics aware than a comic fan. I was an X-Men fan back in the 80s. And I have been a fan of various independent comic books over the decades, but I was never like a huge comic geek, right? So for me, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. works as a series because it works as a series, not because it is a collection of Easter eggs for the fans.
Yeah.
If John Constantine is all about, oh, that's so cool because that comes from this and this comes from that, it's going to fail for me completely. I think the problem with Gotham is sounds like it's so tied up in, hey, let's do the backstories of all these characters that we all know and love from their real stories.
Yeah.
That it's just a bunch of, it's purely fan service and not a good story.
Yeah.
All I know about Gotham, other than what Jeff has told me, is that that Oswald is fandom wooby. That's all I know.
Yeah, that the Penguin is been designed to appeal to fandom. That and they, I could probably talk at length about how they get their gender issues, both in how they treat the female characters and how they treat alternate sexuality.
But you don't want to make my head
explode. I don't want to make your head explode, so we're not going to go there. What I do want to talk about, since we're on this vein, is CW and how they seem to be the network if you want to. Well, first off, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., before we get into the CW shows. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
The season was nice.
This season's been great so far. That
we kind of lost interest midway through last season. We're like, we'll get to it. I don't care. And then we watched it in a binge. Mm-hmm. And we're able to jump right into the season, and it's been fun. We looked forward to it. It was, you know, we have these 10 things we can watch. What are we going to watch? We're going to watch, you know, it was either Arrow or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Those mm-hmm. were the two things that we hopped on first.
Well, I think with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., last year the problem that hamstrung them was they had to do a slow burn because of the tie-in to Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things the fans complained about turned out to be things they were just waiting to get to once Winter Soldier happened. Because I remember back last year, I was like, wow, Garrett's just kind of a bland character. Or not Garrett. Ward. Yeah, Ward is a bland character. Well, it turned out that was very on purpose.
Yeah.
And ultimately handled brilliantly. This season, they haven't had to slow burn on a Marvel movie. They've been able to do what they want. Mm-hmm. And so...
get what I want for.
Having the great story of, I don't think this is definitely a spoiler because it's been everywhere. They've been doing a great story of leading to the underground city. And it's the whole, basically they've been doing a story that they've been building since season one of what's Sky's secret, what's going on, what's Sky's secret and what was the cost of bringing Coulson back to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do hope that, I don't think it's enough to give Sky a purpose. We still need to make her...
Interesting?
Yeah.
Have a personality?
I have been enjoying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this
just
season.
Just because you give the sexy lamp a purpose doesn't make her mm-hmm.
anything. No. I have been enjoying it. It does feel like an extended ripoff of Alias. I keep expecting that there'll be like a Rambaldi device show up and Coulson will have a sexy girlfriend this season and everybody will be up on arms. I don't know, whatever. But yeah, it does seem like it's retreading a lot of it's treading in the steps that Alias did 10 years ago.
I could make horrible comments related to there, but I won't.
Yeah. And this season has been better, but it feels like the second one telling of the bigger stories that were getting bigger and better. And yes, they are great big movies, so you expect them mm-hmm. to be really big, or you have the comics that you're coming from, which are, you know, long-reaching and have had years to develop everything. I want them to continue. I love all of the actors involved. Mm-hmm. Ming-Na is just...
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
Divine. Like the fight, the two Ming.
Yeah.
The Ming versus Ming fight. Yeah.
Yeah. Was beautiful, elegant, destructive, and just hot as fuck. And you know that spin, slam her face into the table was like the best thing.
Choreography. I've
ever seen. I think there was cheering. There was rewinding, rewatching, yeah. rewinding, rewatching, cheering. Okay, we can watch the rest now.
The thing I'm interested in is the plot line. They are doing right now is, if they're keeping it as a cohesive universe, will directly tie into one of the future movies. Yeah. Because, I'm just going to say, because I think most people know it, I don't think it's a big spoiler now, they're involving the Inhumans.
Oh, really?
That doesn't mean anything. But that brings up a point for me of, will people still be able to enjoy the movies, the MCU stuff, without having watched the shows? Because there comes a point where if you get too interlinked in your own mythos, mm-hmm. you're going to lose people.
Yeah.
Because, like, while I have heard good things about Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., especially for this season, mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm not invested in actually watching it.
True. Mm-hmm. The reason I bring that up is one of the movies Marvel announced over the next phase is The Inhumans.
Okay.
Oh, that's right, they did.
So, they're doing a tie-in that will have to directly tie into one of the movies because it's mm-hmm. what it's all about.
I know who The Inhumans are.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because I got the Marvel Guide to the Guide to the Marvel Universe that came out in comic book form back in 1984, but I had no idea that they connect the underground city. That just went completely over my head, will continue to do so.
But I think the point is, as a comic book fan, I know that mm-hmm. you don't. Did it take away from your enjoying the episode?
No, it didn't.
Yeah,
but the thing is, it needs to be better.
Yeah,
it was better this season, but it still needs to be better. Sky needs to be interesting.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's, you know, we talked about this. There has been a flux of boring women And that's sad. And yeah. The thing is, there's a lot of good actresses out there, and I don't know if it's the writing for the women characters or if it's the actors can't handle the role. Because, let's do Flash.
Yeah.
Why are two men pining head over heels in love with Iris because she is boring as hell and has no chemistry with anyone?
Yeah. Well, it's, okay, so we're getting into CW territory with it. Okay, so first off, The Flash is my favorite new series of the year. It may be my favorite TV show, period, right now.
And, but the thing is, I had a comment on Twitter when I did my Flash confessions.
Yeah.
She has no chemistry.
Yeah.
Bjorn commented to me on Twitter, you could say the exact same thing about, and this is going to say it right here, what's her name, the lawyer from Arrow.
Yes, completely. Yeah.
No,
what's her name?
Lauren.
You're not,
Lauren played me by, so much, I don't remember her name.
You're not wrong, and and this is... This is a consistent problem that CW properties have had.
Since Smallville.
In fact, I name it the Chloe syndrome. Let me explain the syndrome.
Yeah,
the Chloe syndrome is you have the one true pairing. In this case, it was Clark and Lana.
Clark and Lex.
But the problem is...
Yes!
The problem is that the girl playing Lana was not a very good actress and had no chemistry with Tom Welling.
Yeah.
Allison Mack, who played Chloe, had chemistry with everyone.
I know. And you're like, you're with the wrong girl, but unfortunately you can't.
And now, here's an interesting thing. So on Flash, you got the same problem. They've got Iris, who in the comics ultimately Barry marries, so she's the one true love. But he frankly, Barry has chemistry with every other female he's interacted with but her. He's got a little bit with Caitlin.
I don't like Flash as much as
you do. Okay, and of course, he has chemistry with Felicity, but that's because everyone has chemistry with Felicity.
Which one's Felicity?
Felicity is from Arrow.
Completely.
But that's because Emily... Emily Bette Richards, is a great actress.
She is, yeah.
And took a one-episode character and turned it into not just a regular, but the female lead of the show.
Really?
She's that good. And at least the producers of Arrow were smart enough to go, all right, we've done it again. Steve Amell has no chemistry with Katie Cassidy, who plays Laurel, and even though she's going to be Black Canary, but he's got ton of chemistry with Felicity. And you know what? Arrow is a lesser known property. There's no one saying Arrow played the field anyway. Green Arrow played the field in the comics anyway. So you know what? Oliver's falling in love with Felicity. Why? Because we can.
Because how would he not? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's all.
See, Smallville could have been resolved by having a comet hit and personality switch.
Yes.
Chloe and Lana, then I'd have watched that show.
You know what? There was a lot of fan theory in the early days of Smallville that Chloe was actually Lois Lane and just was either under an alias or would change her name later in life. And then
I read very different fan theories.
Yeah, but
mine focused on different relationships.
At least when they brought Lois Lane to the show, they were smart enough to find somebody who had chemistry with Tom Welling.
Yeah.
Back to the current shows. Yeah, with Arrow, the producers have always been smart in that they realize we have to make our smart characters smart. So that goes back to Diggle, that there's no way a pro like Diggle would be fooled for very long by Ollie constantly ducking out on him.
I loved that.
So they had him figuring stuff out, to which Ollie finally went, I really got to bring you in on the secret because you're going to figure it out anyway.
Yeah. To be really honest, Felicity and Diggle are my very favorite characters
on
the entire show.
Yeah.
I love The Flash because it embraces its comic book roots. And I love that we've got a show where they've said, you know what, we've got a hero who is optimistic, who believes in people, and who is trying to do the right thing simply for the fact that he can.
Yeah.
Or as somebody put it, welcome to the CW, where the part of Superman will be played by The Flash and the part of Batman will be played by Green Arrow.
Basically,
On a critical level, I have problems with The Flash. Okay, I like, what's his name that plays The Flash, that plays Barry. He's great. Mm. The character who plays Iris, no chemistry, no personality there.
Right.
Very bland. Daniel Panabaker, who plays
Caitlin.
Caitlin. Experienced actress. I loved her on Shark. She was awesome as Shark's daughter. James Woods' daughter.
They are giving her more.
Finally, after what, 10 episodes? They're finally giving her inklings of a personality. Yeah. I mean, she's just, and the poems, I don't even know what she does. She's a cipher. She stands at the security console and says, you know, torpedoes away, Captain. I mean,
this is one of the things I've been really careful of, especially about Flash, is trying not to read into the comic book identity. Mm-hmm. Every character on that show has a comic book counterpart.
Oh, yeah, of course they do.
Everyone.
And again, I was never a DC fan, so I'm taking it as a story by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, so far, yeah, Daniel Panabaker's character, Caitlin, is a cipher who doesn't have any chemistry with anybody because she doesn't. There's no person there, and mm-hmm. The problem is okay. So, I have for my sins watched a very large number of Lifetime movies, and
probably more than I ever have.
Oh yes, because I was married to Sadie, and Sadie really liked Lifetime movies. And
see, that's why.
What's his name? Who plays the scientist?
The guy who plays Dr. Wells.
Yes, yeah. John something or other has. Was in a million of them. He was like their go-to guy. And so I see that. I see snaggy lawyers, and I see that awful remake of that Ingrid Bergman, Claude Rains, Cary Grant movie. And the problem is, I also see Mutant X.
Oh, I love Mutant X.
I know, but it was,
it was so Canadian.
It was so Canadian. And
really was.
And really kind of
amazingly expensive to try and find now.
Yeah.
And of course he's evil. None of that has been a surprise at all. They've been telegraphing it like a mile away. I know. Yeah, I know.
See, as a comic book fan, I'm wanting to see which way they go with it.
Mm-hmm.
As a comic book fan, there's certain things I have just by knowing the characters' names.
Yeah.
Okay. I know where what Eddie is supposed to be alluding to, mm-hmm. and as a fan, but there's the realization of there are people watching this show who do not know who any of these characters are. And like at least the show is accessible to them. Just mm-hmm. like Arrow. You know what? To the Arrow fans, Felicity and Oliver getting together makes perfect sense because they don't have the idea that Laurel was supposed to be the Black Canary and thus.
Yeah.
Is one true love, so no one cares. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here's one thing to give you. Caitlin Snow in the comic books is a supervillain.
Oh, all right.
And Cisco is a superhero.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So they both exist like that. So between the two, though Arrow, all right, I love Arrow. And Arrow's season finale may be one of the best season finales they've ever...
Oh, really?
Okay,
no.
I think it was.
No.
I'm going to finally fight Russell Gull, and did they inject him with opium so he suddenly became slow and stupid in a fight?
I'm not talking about the fight choreography.
But that was the whole point of the episode.
I'm talking about
all led up to that scene.
He might have walked up and punched himself in the face a couple times.
I know.
I'm talking about from a story standpoint.
We're in clown shoes, so we trip over our own feet a few times.
From a story standpoint, I think it was amazing. I agree. That was for a show that has had such phenomenal choreography. My only thing I can assume is this. The only thing I can assume is this for the choreography point of view. The actor playing Ra's al Ghul probably can't handle the choreography as well.
It's even the result of the fight.
I know, even that. But I mean, okay, so, you know, to have a big fight between two immensely skilled people. You can do this on screen. We have all watched The Princess Bride. Okay.
Yeah, fair point.
You know, you can have two incredibly skilled opponents fight each other with swords or any kind of weapon you want. Look at the million Chop Saki movies out there.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have people who obviously know what they're doing, fighting like they're really fighting, but you can tell one's just a little bit better because he's had, I don't know, 500 years more training, whatever it is Ra's al Ghul has, he's immortal or something. And wins at the end because, you don't know the Capretto defense. Ah, there you go, Gork, gotcha.
Yeah, you know instead...
But not swinging haymakers and
with his apple
Yeah.
All I'm saying, so I am, again, what I like about it, it had nothing to do with the choreography.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what, it is where they're going to go with the story from here, and the elements I enjoy. And I am perfectly willing to say, I liked it, you guys didn't. We mm-hmm. do not have to agree.
Yeah.
We do not have to agree. I am saying, I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
from a straight and from the potential of where they're going to do with them when they come back.
The episode wrapped, and we were like, I don't know what just happened.
Yeah.
I have no super dog in this fight. I have not watched this.
So,
but watching you guys argue is hilarious. Yeah.
Okay, well, so I'm glad we could entertain you.
So that is your purpose.
Are you not entertained?
I think the root of this, is sort of something you've alluded to already, which is that the vast majority of people watching Arrow have no grounding at all in this at all. So they will completely accept Arrow and Felicity together eventually, someday, if they ever, you know, work their shit out. And as somebody, my creative outlet throughout has been running role-playing games.
Right.
And as a game master, you learn, and I know, not just because I've read this, because I've done it, if you're going to adapt fiction, don't stick to it.
Yeah.
You cannot stick to it or your game will not work.
Right.
So, as when you're adapting something that's got 50 years of continuity, be it Superman or be it Batman or be it Green Arrow or whatever, you can't stick to the source material.
Yeah.
You can say, you know, you as a huge fan can go, oh, I know where they're going from here. That's awesome. And I see how they're leading up to it. But if it doesn't work, if it becomes too labored to write that as a piece of new adapted fiction, you gotta drop it.
Well, that's also a fault with comics in general. I mean, comics themselves don't hold true to their own canon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's always adaptations and resets and reboots. And oh, that was last issue. That didn't stick.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's that sort of thing where if you're doing any sort of new media adaptation of an existing media source, you do have to balance what is going to be a good storytelling decision versus making the long-term fans happy.
Right.
Which is why, you know, there will probably never be an adaptation of Dracula that makes me happy. Because the only way there's going to be an adaptation that makes me happy is if someone does a miniseries, like two-season-long miniseries based off the actual novel. And even then, if you don't have Van Helsing talking like lolcats, I'm not going to be here.
and that gets back to what we were talking about earlier, about how so much of the action is on television these days. And I think part of the reason for that is because it's the small screen, because people's expectations of the visual wow aren't as big. You can do even an effects-heavy, long-form storytelling without having to spend $500 million to produce three big-budget movies. Mm-hmm. You can do 13 hours of television and do a 13-hour story without having to break it up into five movies.
Yes.
Well, so I'll talk about the mixed reaction to the new Evil Dead TV show that they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about
really
it.
Yes.
I don't know how. I don't know how I feel.
Bruce Campbell. And it's going to be in the same time vein, so that he has been dicking around at the
S-Mart.
Yes, avoiding his responsibilities.
That's brilliant.
And
for 30 years.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, you and me both.
I've gotten really mad, but it's like, you know, if somebody were to tell you that there is like a new movie, like the people would be woo-woo, but they're going to give you like 13 hours
of
Evil Dead. With the original people, behind it.
Tappert and Raimi are involved.
I don't know if they can support 13 hours of storytelling based off that story.
That's the question.
Yeah.
So at this point,
without it being, you know,
well, I would love for there to be episodes just like Ash goes to the grocery store.
You know?
Here's the other thing about that,
and
which
here's
is
his
that,
Old Spice commercial,
which is that American television. With all the non-network outlets that we have now, with the Netflixes and the Amazon Primes and so forth, we're seeing a lot more of the sort of British standard of TV making, which is, we're going to have a 6-episode series, and that's it.
Yeah.
We're going to have 6 hours of story, and then done. And then we'll never do it again, or we'll come back 5 years later, you know.
Yeah.
I still need
to see Black Mirror.
So you can have...
I have one episode left.
You know, it's. I'm not certain. I haven't watched Hemlock Grove, the second episode of Hemlock Grove, the second series of Hemlock Grove.
Yeah,
but the first one told a story and ended.
Yeah,
hooray! There didn't have to be this endless thing of we have to keep everything open. We can't ever resolve anything.
The Chris Carter problem.
Yeah, the Chris Carter problem. Or I mean, you know, God, I mean, how many cop shows? How many police procedurals have there been where it's like, are the two partners ever going to sleep together? Oh my god!
Because oh my god, the sexual tension. For.
Yes, but yeah. then they finally do sleep together, and it ruins the series yeah. because it's now changed the story.
And then you have
but
no
then
line.
They but they still have to. But oh well, you still have to keep going next year because we're still making money.
Yeah.
So this is already the longest episode of Fanboy News Network ever. So I think it's probably getting to the point we should wrap up. So I have one question. And I said I want to wrap up, but I'm going to ask this question anyway. What are you looking forward to in 2015?
Crimson Peak! Oh my god, Crimson Peak! Give it to me now, now, now!
I hear there's this Star Wars movie that
I wish I cared.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to?
Oh, I don't know. I'm in indie culture.
The end of American Horror Story.
It's just so bad. It's just so not good. What I am looking forward to is it's what I'm going to be. It's what I talk about in the Don't Read the Latin. I am looking forward to that director we haven't even seen yet. And,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to that independent release. I'm looking forward to that poor guy who gets something VOD released and two podcasts hear about it and it gets fucking distribution because the battery got known 2 years ago for. A podcast heard about it and told people about it.
Yeah.
And they mentioned it to Scream Factory while they were there, and it got a Blu-ray release. You know, I'm not looking for, you know, I mean, I don't know, nerdy Ben? I don't know. But yeah. I think there's good stuff on the horizon. It's going to come from a place you're not expecting it.
I'm going to go with Ant-Man.
Really?
No, I'm kidding. Nobody's looking forward to Ant-Man. I'm going to go with Age of Ultron. That's my big
yeah.
Can I go watch this now, please? Movie,
right?
I think I'm looking forward to Age of Ultron, and I'm kind of with Jen. I'm except instead of a horror movie horror director, I'm looking forward to something being good on television, which we haven't heard of yet.
So
season two of Penny Dreadful,
season two of Penny Dreadful, yes,
yeah. Penny Dreadful.
Yeah, I think we're all looking forward to that,
and I'm looking forward to the Marvel Universe movies making a lot of money so that I get a larger bonus again this year.
Go Kingdom of Mouse.
I also support this
because I work for Disney. You know, and if Disney makes a huge profit, then they bump our bonus up.
I don't have
up
time for another radio play or another podcast, but honestly, the coolest crap I am hearing is radio dramas. Is podcasts that I found.
You know, I want to shout out to one I listened to recently, because I'm searching always for good radio drama podcasts. I love them. I'm trying to write one right now, which if we ever get near to production, you'll start hearing about. But I discovered a new one recently called EOS 10 that people should listen to. EOS 10. It's, I forget where this theater group's out of, but it's about the medical staff on a space station in the future. And it's basically a comedy. It's got some serious moments in it, but it's a brilliantly written and voice acted show. And I've had a little Tumblr back and forths with the creator where we've reblogged each other a couple of times. But it's a great show. It's only 8 episodes. The first season was 8 episodes. They were smart. They wrote the episodes. They produced them. They put it out. They're now gauging fan reaction, which seems to be going well. So I'd recommend that. I'm always going to be on the search for those new things. The movie-wise, yeah, I have to say for myself also, Age of Ultron. The other thing I'm looking forward to is there's some stuff I'd love to get if it wasn't so expensive. I love Scream Factory Shout Factory. And there's so
and
many...
Twilight Time is another one that they do. It's a little more expensive. It's even a little bit more expensive than that. Because
if I could afford it... Well, if I could afford it, I would dearly love to get the Adam West Batman series Blu-ray coming out, the remastered.
I want the
Pee Wee's Playhouse.
There's one thing I want to mention that I mentioned on Don't Read the Latin. Tales from Beyond the Pale by Larry Fessenden, who's kind of a character actor, director. He's kind of put out a bunch of movies. They're radio dramas, and they're all about 30 to 40 minutes. And they're straight, they're like Twilight Zone for grumps. It's almost black, kind of Black Mirror, but where it's, you know, it's, but it's not, you know, dealing with technology.
Yeah.
But they are scary. They are grown up. They are vicious.
Ooh.
I think there's only like maybe 8 episodes or something in the first season. I mean, it's only a handful. You can get them on Audible or iTunes. And you have to, you get two stories in an episode, and they are frightening.
Okay. Tales from Beyond the Pale.
Yeah, and it's got a bunch of big names. Like, they've had Clancy Brown.
Okay.
They've had a bunch of, you know, a bunch of good character actors reading for it, and but they're really scary.
Okay.
Really good.
Hannibal Season 3. I'm looking forward to Hannibal Season 3.
Yeah.
Who lives?
We were recording Don't Read the Latin.
Are we getting more Gillian Anderson?
We've agreed we're probably just going to have a family night.
Oh, yeah.
That night. Get together, watch the premiere.
Drink heavily.
There'll be hors d'oeuvres. Jill will probably get drunk.
No, because it won't be like Dracula. So.
That was a funny night.
It's not like she has to numb the pain.
All right, so
with that,
thank you all for taking the time, because I know this has been a long day. We've recorded two very long podcasts today.
Yeah, I'm like, I have a five-year-old who's got a turkey timer that just popped out.
Yeah.
As she wanders out.
So, real quick, how can everyone get a hold, go to your self-plugs real quick as we wrap up?
Jennifer Lovely at Don't Read the Latin and JengaLoves.com.
I'm Michael Montour. You can find me at Don't Read the Latin and at bloodletters.com.
I'm Jillian Venters. You can find me at gothiccharmschool.com and gothiccharmschool.tumblr.com.
Do you even care to say?
I'm Brian Lovely, and I'm socially invisible. Hi.
Hi. Anyone listening, if you want to drop us a line here at the show, you can either leave us a comment at fanboynewsnetwork.com in the episode, or you can email me at Taliban@fanboynewsnetwork. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And we got a five-year-old who's joined us.
You want to say hi?
Hi.
Hi. The future of fandom is with
us
as well.
Right.
So thank you very much for listening, and have a great 2015. This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network, and is copyright 2015 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from The Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.